Unsilencing Stories is a podcast that reflects the voices of people in small towns and communities in Canada who have lost loved ones to the toxic drug supply crisis. Since 2016, more than 30,000 people have died from fatal overdoses in Canada, and that number continues to climb. The risk in smaller towns and communities is much higher than in urban areas because of a lack of harm reduction services and stigma against substance use and people who use drugs. This podcast is part of a community-based participatory research project facilitated by Erin Goodman, PhD, a faculty member at Kwantlen Polytechnic University in Surrey, BC, along with students Jenna Keeble and Ashley Pokernich. The aim was to assist collaborators in publicly memorializing their loved ones and expressing grief, as well as challenging silences imposed by dominant media organizations and stigma from society against substance use and people who use drugs. We hope these nuanced stories make it clear why the government needs to be doing more to prevent further deaths. Please note, this podcast contains information about overdose death, grief, and trauma that may be distressing to listen to. In this episode, you'll hear Lorianna Cahoos speaking with Ramsey Whitfield in Prince George, BC, about his friend Riley, who experienced a fatal overdose at age 38.
His name is Riley. He was about the same age I am. I'm 40. I think he was about 38 or 39, I think he was. He lived in Nanaimo, just down on the island. Oh, we shared so many good times together. Basically, we went to treatment together in Vancouver at Intervisions, and he was the first person that welcomed me to the place when I first got there, and I was ready to walk out, but he actually managed to keep me to stay there. No, I remember his smile that he used to have every time that we would laugh, because everybody that has... A lot of people that are in addiction have certain personalities and traits that they carry with them, and a certain arrogance that comes about him, and he would always laugh every time they would try and tell their war stories and better the other people. He ended up being my roommate, and he ended up being the one that pretty much kept me from going back out and doing stupid things. My first memory of him was his big-ass smile when I walked through the door, because I was so flippin' skinny. He was giggling and chuckling at me because I was skinnier than a leaf. I've seen a lot of people pass in my time. And yeah, it doesn't get any easier, but the sad part is it seems to not be getting much harder though either. It seems to be just a normal thing to watch people pass away these days. And the saddest part is that, you know, we used to have funerals and celebration of life for people and stuff. And now it seems like there's just so many people passing away that it's, you barely even get to go to the funerals anymore because of COVID and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, we had conflict a few times because of me being roommates and stuff like that. He was a fentanyl person and I was more of a crackhead kind of person. So we kind of had a lot of difference of opinions when it came to a lot of things. But for the most part, we would just talk it out. And up until the day he died, we used to pretty much be able to talk to each other and pretty much help guide and coach each other to stay sober, right? Until that day happened. So we used to joke about all the new guys coming in, because they all thought they would be the next guy to be sober and clean, but you could also tell, after you've been around so many people in addiction for so long, you can also tell the people that are going to go back out right away. Things are a little bit different now, because like Riley, he also, once you get to a special bond built with somebody, you know, after a while, you kind of gain a bit of confidence around them, right? Especially when it comes to beating your addiction and stuff, right? And then now when people like him pass away and you realize that it's all up to you to do it by yourself, it makes it a lot harder and it's a lot tougher. It really is. It's the first thing I wanted to do is go and use myself, but I managed to tough through it somehow. So it's very, very hard. It's very hard to meet people and then lose them. I would describe him as a fun-loving family guy. He left behind a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, and a 2-year-old. And fondest memory of him is just sitting there laughing in the smoke pit at the treatment center, just laughing at pretty much our own stupidity and our own demise and all the time that we've wasted in our lives due to the drugs and partying and stuff like that. Let's call him Smiley Riley. He was always smiling. This guy was always happy. Why he went out and did what he did again, he called me Rammer. Yeah, there's a huge lesson to be learned. I mean, I've got a 8-year-old son myself, and seeing him leave his children behind like that, I mean, these children, they've only got what we give them in life, right? You know, it was a huge wake-up call for me. You kind of think about, like, what would happen if I died and my son grew up without a father and didn't get to do a lot of the things that children should have the opportunity to do in life. That's what makes it so sad about him dying, right? I've met a lot of people that have died, car accidents, this, that, whatever, but nothing's been more tragic when people leave their kids behind. We met each other. He actually picked me up from the Abbotsford Airport, actually, when I went down to Vancouver to go to the treatment center. He was the one that picked me up and drove me to the InterVisions. When he got to pass me my 60-day certificate, down to InterVisions after 60 days to give you a certificate, and they celebrate your achievements. And he actually got to stand up, bash me, and rip me a new one in front of everybody. Yeah, he looked like he quite enjoyed himself. I thought it was pretty funny myself, too. But it was a really good opportunity to have someone close to you that it lets you know that you have, like, a new friend, right? No, I don't. I actually never knew him very in his earlier years. I wish I did. I wish I would have known him my whole life. Like the case of most people, it's just not enough time with people, right? Me and him were actually going to go get jobs together. We were going to start up a delivery company where we deliver heavy equipment because I've got tons of training in driving all the equipment. And he had a class 1 license, so we were going to start up a delivery company down in Nanaimo, and I was going to move my kid down there. He ended up passing away 4 days before I left treatment. So I would spend the day kicking the crap out of him for what he did. I really would. We just ended up walking. We went down. We were going to go to Value Village and get our kids a couple things from Value Village to send to our kids. And he ended up sitting beside the 7-Eleven while I went inside, and some guy ended up selling fentanyl, and he snuck it back to his room. And that's when later that night we woke up, and I woke up to him ODing on the floor, right? And there's nothing I could do. There's no Narcan kits around. There's nothing. Yeah. He just went out in a very cowardly way, I thought. So, yeah, I'd spend a day kicking the crap out of him and slapping around and trying to straighten him out a bit. His favorite color was blue. He put blue on everything, man. Our bedroom was, every picture had to have blue in it, like everything. His pajamas were blue, like everything was blue about this guy. Well, this is where me and him had a differed lot. I listened to a lot of heavy metal and some rap and stuff like that, hip hop. And he was 100% country. And I don't exactly do country music too well. It's a little too sappy for my liking. But he used to always say, chobby chop chop. Hurry up. Get it done. He wasn't a very patient fella. He had a huge impact on my life. A lot of the times when you go to a treatment center, if you don't bond with someone right away, a lot of people tend to end up leaving. And I had an immediate bond with him. He made me feel very welcome. Because of him, I actually ended up staying clean and sober to this day. The best way I can honor him is just not to go out and get high again. Just to learn from his mistakes. You know, you see how a lot of the times when you're sitting across from somebody in treatment and stuff like that, you guys really get to the bottom of a lot of issues. And when you see that you're guilty, you feel because of when you start talking about your kids and the impact that you've done to your kids, it really, really hits home. It really does. There's something about it that it's like you can finally put your own bullshit aside and you start to worry and consider the fact that you're actually doing damage to other people. And that alone sometimes can actually keep people clean and sober. And it works. Come in the store, don't sit out beside the store, by far. I wish I went to left him outside. I knew he seemed a little off that day, but I didn't. I mean, there's no way you could see it coming, but I wish I would have been the guy outside the store instead of him, because I don't do fentanyl, and I would have told you guys to take a hike. My biggest fear nowadays is that my kid's going to go and try drugs for the first time and end up ODing or something like that. But the drugs are so synthetic and they're not what they used to be. They've always had the power to do it. It's just they keep it that way because the system's corrupt, right?
That brings us to the end of this episode of the Unsilencing Stories podcast. To listen to more interviews in the series, please go to www.unsilencingstories.com. And if you'd like to share your thoughts on the episode, message us at unsilencingstories@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and please share the project with other people you know.